Hey, welcome to Vision Maker Podcast. I am here today with my guest, Nicole Rinaldi, and she is a director, a production designer. And Nicole, why don't you let our guests know a little more about yourself, get a little background to yourself?
Yeah, so I'm a director that mainly specializes in stories that, I'd say stories that either keep me up at night or the ones that lull me to sleep. A lot of my work is very bringing the subconscious back to the surface. So sometimes that involves surreal imagery. Sometimes that involves the way the design of the set interacts with the person, like demonstrates what they're feeling, what their psyche is in that moment.
I mean, that's great. I love the psychological aspect and that you put more in depth. So when you're just a quick question right off of that is, when you are thinking about your project and everything, are you going more into the psyche of the characters in the film or into the psyche of the viewer and what in the journey you're trying to take them through? Or is it more about the actual subject of what you're filming?
That's such a great question. I'd say definitely more character-based, even especially with like music video where it's specifically like what is the story about how like the artist kind of wrote the track or like what about the basically like kind of like the what prompted the artist to write this song.
I love it. Okay. So yeah, so that's great. I want to come back to that, but I really want to get started more. So we know each other. We actually, we met at the Long Island Film Festival where we were both up for nominations. And I remember you got Best Music Video for a great project, and then we got our own award with our feature Interabled. But I really want to hear now, like, we got to know each other a little bit back then, but I would love to hear more about your journey actually getting into filmmaking, because you are relatively young by the world standards, but you already have a good track record. I've seen your work, and you got a nice little list of accolades already building up for yourself. And so, yeah, definitely walk us through your journey on how you got into this whole crazy world that we're in.
No, absolutely. Like any director, past few years has had nothing to do with directing. we all got to pay bills somehow. So I actually started in documentary, weirdly enough, as a production coordinator, taking it all the way back to, so I went to Emerson College, and that's in Boston. So I actually started working as an intern, and then when their production coordinator left for like a beautiful travel job, which is just like, yes, please go on that. That is epic for you. And I'm so happy. they're like, hey, would you be interested in taking her position? You know, part-time, because I was still working, like I was still in school and I also had a different job with the college. And I was like, heck yeah, like I would love to get my start here. And then that job led to, when I was applying for jobs in LA for the LA program at Emerson, someone saw that I worked as a production coordinator already at a documentary production company. So they pulled my resume, immediately called me being like, hey, would you be interested in this position actually? And it would be like an assistant production coordinator role at a company called Interloper Films. And that's with Ani Timoner. Her last film, Last Flight Home, premiered at Sundance. It's currently on Paramount Plus. The film I worked on was called Coming Clean. I forget where that one's available, but it's probably available online somewhere. That one's a really beautiful film about the opioid crisis, and just like the way we interpret the people struggling with addiction. Very beautiful film. I highly recommend. So like now I'm in LA. I'm a production coordinator as a day job, but now I'm trying to, you know, I'm a director and a production designer. I'm trying to get gigs. One thing I would do to kind of build up my portfolio and build up my connections was, and this is perfect for anyone that's in the LA area trying to build connections, especially in production design. You could work at AFI. So the way they do their program is they have like a few cycle films for their first years. And basically the way they format their program is they have twice as many directors as they do production designers. So they will outsource production designers to do their cycle films because those are supposed to be not like the bad omelets, but it's like, you know, like trying to experiment before they have to go for their thesis, which is like a really interesting way to do a program. But the cool thing with that is like you yourself as like an outside freelancer kind of get to be part of that educational process of like experimenting with them. And it's like just really cool resources to design with or to work your way up in art department.
That's really cool. Yeah. I mean, they really, it sounds like they let you, you can get your hands dirty, mess up, try things, and it doesn't really matter if it's a mistake because you can, you just learn to finagle all these things together.
Oh, absolutely. And, like, yeah, like just to continue on, on AFI, like, so they have like a, what they call the mill, and it's basically, it's an outside woodworking shop, and they have a bunch of flats. They have like a little trailer of different furniture, and then they have spaces within AFI, like a soundstage, and then like a classroom you can rent out to like build sets if you want to. Yeah, it's really crazy to work there. I highly recommend for anyone trying to get their start in LA. Even if you're looking for anything else, it's probably the easiest access to a very professional set any beginner can get their hands on.
Were you from LA or did you move there?
No, from Long Island.
You are from Long Island.
Yeah. I just, it's just like, it's kind of crazy in terms of my journey. So, cause I did Boston and then did the LA program. I'm like, okay, maybe, you know, it seems like everyone gets their start in LA. I'm going to move out here and like stay here.
I feel a lot of people can resonate to that.
Yeah. And then the pandemic kind of turned it all like all around. So like me leaving LA for the pandemic, I was like, this is going to be temporary. I was literally helping out on an AFI set like the weekend before the official lockdown notice went down. And we were all just like, do you think like everyone's going to get to like finish their films? Like what do we think is going to happen? It's just like, it's got to be like a 2-month closure. Like it's like about to go down. I know. So like, and like the official thing comes down at my workplace at the time, Interloper Films. It became very clear that this was going to be like a danger. So I digitized all my work so I could work remotely. So like I digitized a bunch of receipts. I made it. Yeah, I was like, I want work during this if this happens.
That's smart. That is so smart.
So yeah, like I just spent like a day and a half like aggressively digitizing everything I could need and making it super easy for anyone who like needs to access this online. And then I was like, okay, cool. That's done. And then my dad was just like, hey, are you thinking about like maybe coming home? Like, especially during this time. And I'm like, I don't know. And then, like, I opened my fridge. And, like, I kid you not, I had in my fridge half a thing of breakfast sausages and one full box of French toast sticks and I think 3 eggs. And I was just like, I will not survive.
You're like, okay. I see how it is.
Yeah. It's just like, I go home now. It is literally cheaper for me to fly home than to fight someone for groceries this week. So I'm like, okay, I'll get a one-way ticket, come back home. And then what started as like, oh, this will be a couple months. This will be a few more months. And then my lease was running out. I'm like, I should just move temporarily. And then it just became not temporary.
Man. Yeah, no. Yeah, that definitely like, it's so funny hearing all the different stories that popped out about that. But it was also great to hear, like, so many, I've seen a trend with our guests that, like, because of the pandemic, and myself included, it really shaped our current careers, you know, and actually opened new opportunities for us, too, you know? Especially when some of us were able to pre-plan or pivot quickly, I would say, you know, for it. So it sounds like you had that, at least you digitized it. So this way, it didn't matter where you were. You can still work on those projects.
No, it's like really interesting that you say that. Cause like, so we're definitely going to talk about the music video I made completely safely during lockdown with paper animation. But like,
yep, that's coming up.
Yeah. Stay tuned. But it's just like, not even just that. It's like in terms of, so something that's going to be so different from LA in terms of the way New York City film production works is New York City has a lot of photo studios. This is where more of like your fashion, videography, and photography happens. So when I was looking for real work when the world was opening back up a bit, I started working in like the studio system. And that's, you know, like that's your Spring Studios, that's your Pier 59, that's your Milk Studios. there's like a bunch of different studio/gear rental places in New York City. And that's like its own little tiny industry that I started getting into, I want to say early 2021.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, with the gear rentals and everything like that. And then how did you get introduced to Spring Studios?
So like most people, I was just aggressively searching for jobs when it seemed like it could be like viable again to work. And it was like a Facebook post from like the studio manager. There's more professional ways to apply now, but it was very much like in a Facebook group, like, hey, we're looking for people who know lighting and grip. And so I applied to that, and the interview process for that, Steve, my old boss, very interesting guy, but like the interview for that was like, he would pick up, it was like 15 minutes, he just picked up random grip gear and was just like, can you name this? I'm like, yeah, it's a Cardellini clamp. And he's like, good. Okay, what's this? I was just like, I don't know what it's called, but I know what it goes into and what it's used for. And he's like, close enough. And I was just like, all right, 4 out of 5, not bad.
Close enough. You're good enough to just throw you into the mix, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I feel like our industry is very much like that. As much as we use gaff tape to secure all of our gear together, our whole industry is pretty much just gaff taped together.
Oh, especially like when you take a step, like one step back from the chain of actually using the gear, the people who manage your gear, they are fixing with gaff tape. They are hoping that by the time it gets in your hands, it's functional.
100%. But I think that's part of the fun of production, though. You know, it's a lot of, I like to use the word finagling, but basically it's a lot of like, let's just make it work. As long as it's working. Exactly. It's all creative problem solving, and I love it. some people might not love it. Actually, it's probably very anxiety producing for some people. But yeah, no. So that's, yeah, it's interesting to hear that. So you were from Boston and then you went to LA and now you're back here because of the pandemic. And then you started working at the studio and then you started doing mostly music videos, as what I see is really your bread and butter. And I would love to get into, well, let's do this. What was the first music video opportunity you worked on that really, like, why did you stick to music videos? Like, why was it for you that's like what you wanted to stick to and continue doing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'd say definitely the stop motion angel one. In terms of like, that was a great way to experiment with style, a really great way to experiment with technique.
Yeah, and let's just dive like, into that one a little more. Tell us about that whole journey, how you meet Alex and how the whole project came about.
Yeah, so I met Alex through my friend Dennis. So she did the score for his thesis film, and that is a very interesting score of like, I think it was like, it's like, insert chanting choir noises, I don't know. but so they had like a good partnership after that, and like I was, so this was like after I'm back home, I'm kind of going stir crazy because I want to say it's like 4 months into the pandemic, and it's like very obvious this is not like, you know, doors aren't going to suddenly open in terms of like, you know, moving back to LA or like figuring out like what my next steps are. And I'm like, you know what I can do though? You know what I have all of the time for? I can make little pieces of paper into puppets and then make them do things. I could just do like little quirky stop motion for like months. so yeah, I was like on a call with Dennis because I'm just trying to like Zoom everyone, trying to keep up. And then I was just like, yeah, I don't know if you know any like music artists, like, I don't know if you know anyone from Berkeley or whatever. And it was like, oh yeah, actually like the Alex, she has like her own solo thing and she has a single out. Maybe you could work on that. I'm like, oh. And then basically he set up like a little Zoom. And then we're just like, hi, I'm so-and-so. And like Alex was like, hey, I'm Alex. and then we talked about like what the look I was envisioning in terms of like, I want it to be watercolor animation. I want it to be very textural paper. Kind of want it to be more stream of conscious. And then she was like, okay, yeah, that works. And then maybe like if we can add in elements of the song, so like it elevates the elevates like what the lyrics are, right. Elevates
messaging.
Yeah. So yeah, from that I made, because so the style of animation that I was doing is, it's called like Harry Smith animation. And that is an interesting style in that the way it's very stream of consciousness, but it's also like it flows specifically into the next frame. So like if something's flying out, something's animating back in. So it's very
constant flow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that had to be pretty intensely storyboarded so that I know what element's going to come in when something else is leaving. Mm-hmm. And that was like an interesting, it was interesting trying to have to draw those out and be like, this is where the paper's going to go.
Now that you mentioned that, I do remember feeling like the whole music video just had a very good flowing feel. Like it took you along the ride, like at any point, like you were still like being pulled back in, because like you said, there was no dead moments. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Because you had a lot of also good like transition moments in there where you kind of like had like the flower-esque ones come in and out, you know?
No, I think that one's actually my favorite transition, where it's just like the little paper Alex. Yeah, I made a paper version of Alex, and then I made a paper version of the boy the song was about at the time. And then, so it's like them holding like a little umbrella together, and then like the flowers come up and it's just like a white transition.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't expect it because it's stop motion. Because it's like, that would be impossible to do practically. What I did was I basically did green screen for stop motion in a 2D format. So like no one ever expects things to be layered in a certain way with that music video.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting. You know, I didn't even catch that. So you're having some green screen elements happening during the stop motion too,
yeah,
to make essentially like these transitions, because I felt like, yeah, that felt like a stop motion wipe transition that you would normally get. I just thought that was like, oh, that's a real cool like cinematography element to it, that when you've worked it into this medium, you know, that you don't really see in other stop motion things, not in the same way.
No, I think, yeah, like a thing with like the way other people do stop motion, it's very, not a lot of people do 2D stop motion, which is a shame because you just get so much more fun textural elements.
I think ever since like The Night Before Christmas and all those, like everyone's trying to do the claymation, really.
Yeah, like they're trying to make it look so 3D, and they're trying to make everything so like textured and like the way that makes sense. And it's just like, sometimes it's fun having the texture that is be like the focal point, where it's like working with paper, I was able to put stamps in there. I was able to put magazine cutouts. And there's something that feels interesting when something crinkles and it's like, that's a 3D element, but everything else is technically 2D, and it's all 2D. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. Because it looked like you were using the crinkleness artistically, because you can kind of see the two differences. So how long did that take you?
So luckily I had a whole pandemic, but that took, I want to say, so storyboarding that took like a full week, trying to figure out like how long everything would be. And then it took another, like I'd say 2 months of taking the photos, putting into Lightroom, editing the full arc, and then putting that into Premiere and making sure it transitions into the next thing. And then from there, an additional 2 weeks, because where I storyboarded ended early, like 45 seconds early. It is so tough to, because like when everything's flowing and it's like at 8 frames per second instead of 24, it's just like, it goes so much faster than you expect. So I basically had to be like, oh, I'll just keep adding things.
That's interesting. Yeah. Because as you're doing it, you have an estimation of time.
Yeah.
It's not like video where you can see like, obviously this takes this long, but
yeah, it's like,
that's interesting.
No, like live action is so much easier because it's very literally happening in real time.
Yeah. So that's an interesting challenge. So you just kept adding until you reached the goal length of the song. And that's great. And then I remember, yeah. And then the cool thing is like with that project, you entered into Nylef, and then you actually won the best music video award for that that year. And I thought it was great. You know, it, like you said, it even incorporated the elements of the song and the story. So that all worked really together. Was that a surprise to you?
I mean, they don't program a lot of music videos, but it was still like, it's still very nice to like win something. Another crazy thing with that is, so this happened like a few months later, but it technically, it did screen. Oh no, I said technically. It screened at an Academy qualified festival, one in Spain called Anamajo. And yeah, that was also like a weird trip where it's just like, oh, okay. This is like big leaps, I guess.
Yeah. That is great. So, okay, that's really cool. That's really cool. And now you're at another festival, the Blackbird Film Festival, with Homecoming, I believe is the name of the music video. And that has this real cool, it's like a black box studio look. You know, you got that infinite black going for you. And I would love to hear more about the story behind that video, a little bit over the process with the different ideas, because if you look up the Homecoming music video, it's you got some nice reflection elements going on with water and things like that. And we were talking a little before, and you it's like, it's a real clean look on the final product. Yeah. Like, you'd be surprised how unclean things can be in the actual production of things. So yeah, walk us through a little bit of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to Spring Studios, if you work there long enough, they're nice enough to let you use the studio spaces. They won't let you use the psychs, though. Like, to repaint a psych would be like $2,000. So it's just like, it wasn't done with a psych, which was like a little bit more difficult to build out that black box look. And then to get that clean reflection, it's black reflective plexiglass on the ground with 2 inches of water. So luckily we were able to dumpster dive. A lot of clients leave stuff at Spring Studios because it costs them more to try keeping things, especially if it was barely used. So yeah, like, thank you to Victoria's Secret for just leaving a bunch of unused black reflective plexiglass, like huge sheets. they also like left like a couple bouquets of flowers that we sprinkled into the water at a certain point. Yeah, a little bit of dumpster diving to make that happen. But the way we did it was, so we built a 12 by 20 frame of just like lumber from a lumber yard or like a lumber store a couple blocks away, and then stapled in the tarp so that the water would keep it within tension. And then we had to tape over the edges of the plexiglass so it wouldn't rip the tarp. Then place in the plexiglass, and then we pumped in like about 80 gallons of water to make the little 2 inches.
So 12 by 20, but 2 inches high.
Yeah.
That's a lot of water.
Yeah. Like, oh God. And like the way we did it, like the way we got the water to the studio was so ridiculous, because the slop sink is on the fifth floor. We were on the sixth floor. So we had to transport 80 gallons of water up a flight, like up the elevator, and then into the studio, and then pump that back out. So yeah, we took an EQ hamper, which could fit like, I don't know, four people, like just in it.
Okay.
It took like an EQ hamper on wheels, wheeled it to the slop sink, started filling that up, and then just very carefully went down the hall, tried to not spill it in the elevator, go up the elevator, then try not spilling it on the way out, and then go into studio. And then the only safe way to get it out is like to take like a water pump and physically pump it in, because you cannot dump that water.
Oh yeah, blood.
Yeah, that was just like, yeah. And then like, so yeah.
So you said physical pump, like are you doing like this, or like a little motorized pump? Like
motorized pump. Luckily, I'm from Long Island, so we have these. We have these in case of floods.
True that. Okay, I got you.
So yeah, I had like a little water pump, and I was just like pumping in. Like, I want to say I was like just 20 minutes of me going, wee.
Oh man. You didn't have to make two trips, did you? Like, that was enough.
No, luckily just that fit 80 gallons.
Oh man, that would have been hysterical to see some of the looks you might have been getting as you went down the hall.
Oh, absolutely. And then it was like basically imagine the same process, but in reverse for getting the water out of studio.
Oh.
Yeah.
And for the frame, you said you built the wood frame, but I don't remember ever seeing the edge of the frame in the video. So was that masked out or did you paint the frame to match the black? How'd you get that to disappear?
Yeah, so luckily for the frame, it was a little bit easier to, we took like a strip of black duvetyne and went around the edges.
Okay.
And kind of had that like cascade around. So like we had a little bit more flexibility.
Yeah.
But so like we had that for the edge. And then to block out like a little bit of the studio, we had basically black tarp or like pipe and drape. So we had two sheets going like this. And then like the other side, we're just like, we have the lights coming in that direction. So we couldn't. So it's like, yeah, the raw footage of that, it's just, you see very haphazard pipe and drape, like a sliver of floor in between it. And then, like, the other half of studio, it's just studio. It's just people, like, eating in the corner.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, had to mask around it a little bit.
Okay, so, yeah, so the background is actually a lot of post-work as far as making the pipe and drape not look like pipe and drape.
Yeah.
And just getting that infinite black look for the whole video. Because it looks pretty seamless, you know. And so it's like I would have said that, like, oh, yeah, you probably were in a blacked-out psych wall, you know, but so definitely kudos to you.
Thank you. It did help having a really good colorist work with me on that. So when I was masking it out, one thing that we did was we sampled the color of where it would be like around the talent and then replaced that in the background. So it did look like
seamless.
Yeah, like it would look like if we filmed it raw, seamless, so that when he went to color it, it would actually be seamless.
Oh, okay. No, that's smart. So that's a good trick to know. Yeah, because then you matched it in there so that when he was treating it, it all treated the same.
Exactly. Yeah. Instead of being like, because the first pass I tried doing, it was like, it would look like proper around talent and then it would just fade to like absolute black. And it would just look wrong.
Yeah, because it would look like, it would be subtle, but it would look like a psych glow around the talent the whole time. And you weren't going for that. You were going for just the realism, like, no, this is the room.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then how did you, and even in the reflection, you didn't really have the problem of like those elements being reflected in the water, or did you?
So luckily it's whatever we put light on.
Yeah.
So it was pretty easy to just get it on.
Just get it on the talent.
But one thing that was a pain in the ass to like mask out was there's like a Point in the Music video where Erica slaps the water or like hits the water.
I remember that, yeah.
And I really wanted the water to like keep going into frame as if there wasn't things around it. So I had to go around the water a little bit and like go around, like kind of increase where I was masking and like just go in and paint around the little water droplets just so it looks like it keeps going instead of like a hard stop where the pipe and drape would have started.
That's commitment.
Yeah.
So it sounds like outside of directing, you're pretty hands-on with the rest of the process, the editing and the cinematography, by the sounds of it.
Yeah. I mean, I always recommend to people to directors starting out, you know, if you want to learn cinematography, that's up to you. Learn coloring. Like, learn what it looks like to in color in post, because that's going to inform everything you need to know when you're talking to a DP or you're trying to set up a shot yourself. Otherwise, like especially for the music video, when you just see, like, Rod or, like, Rec 709 on cam, like, on monitor, you're not quite seeing, like, what exactly could be color and what's going to be too. So, like, I'm trying to think of a best example for that would be, like, the music video when we were initially going up for camera. So Talon's in all black. It's a black void. We didn't have enough detail on, like, her legs to make that differentiation. And I knew as a colorist, we were going to need more light there, more detail. So it was easy for me to communicate, like, hey, I need more detail here. Otherwise, she is going to be...
In post, it's not going to work out. Yeah. That's actually, I think, super valuable. And for you, because I've heard a few different opinions on this. I'm curious, for you, what do you feel is the true role of color in your video or your story?
That's a really good question. So going back to like my thesis film, this is going like a little far back,
yeah.
But my thesis film, When the Wolf Comes Home, the way we chose color was all of the walls and like the way we interpreted color in the grade was supposed to be like different phases of a bruise. So scenes where a character was hurt, scenes where there is like active someone sad, basically, those were like bathed in blue. Versus scenes where people are finally starting to move on and starting to kind of feel better about a situation where like a little bit more brown, and scenes where there's like elements of this person can truly heal had yellow. So like I'm a strong believer that color really should be a psychological element that you're adding.
So that goes back to what you originally were saying about the whole psychology of the story. So yeah, so you really feel that color acts as a psychological motivator and as much part of the story. So that's how you would say you would treat it.
Exactly.
Nice. So then speaking on that, what was the choice? Why the choice of all black then? Infinite Black Void for that video?
Other than it made the look or like the effect easier, I think. So like when I was hearing that song and hearing their statement on the album, which is supposed to be, so they describe their EP as the amalgamation of growing up and recognizing the trauma that got you to where you are now. So a lot of that imagery felt so internal. It felt like it's got to be this space that doesn't exist anywhere in reality, but specifically like in their own mind. So part of that, I really love the phrase stream of conscious. There's something about that felt like water, and then that there should be like a deterioration of memory. So a lot of the imagery in that music video was things deteriorating in the water. In terms of color, I really like that you focus on what's in front of you instead of like, it's so sparse until it's not. So it makes you really focus in on the music and like the performance.
I love that aspect where you were trying to combine the two from the memory, like you said, the deterioration, but also that feeling like where they're coming out of, like you said, like from the trauma with the black and everything like that. Because then, yeah, that gives a lot of story sense. Like you said, there's a technical aspect to it that you were going for. But then again, that also speaks when you mention that, because now you understand why you want it, but you also understand the technical side of the implementation that allows you to communicate with your team in that sense. And then also you understanding the editing part. So like for these projects, were you working with an editor and kind of like co-editing with them, or were you like the primary editor for these projects?
So for my upcoming projects, I'm working with editors, which is an interesting workflow. But for Angel, which is a stop motion one, that one I had to do on my own. Otherwise, because the editing informed the shooting. And then it was kind of like each informs the next. So it made a lot more sense for me to just like edit on my own. And then Homecoming, I just like knew going in it was going to be a lot of rotoscope. And I'm like, I don't have the enough money to like pay someone else a rotoscope, but also I don't have the lack of empathy to make someone else do that.
Yeah. Anyone familiar with rotoscoping understood that statement very well.
It was a lot of painting frame by frame.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was going to say a comment I forgot to say because you were going on, but I was like, that's commitment for the expanding the scene for the water, just for the water droplet.
Just
that's,
for that.
That's some real commitment right there for sure. Because I felt that when you say, I was like, really? Wow. No, that's great. Are there any upcoming projects that you're particularly excited about? anything coming down the pipeline that you are looking forward to or in the midst of right now?
Yeah, so two more music videos for the same artist from Homecoming, America Jane. They have a new EP coming out probably in the summer. Their first single comes out 2 weeks from when we're talking. One of the singles I worked on comes out July 5th, and then there's the opening track of the EP that I also worked on. I am equally excited about both, but they're very different music videos.
How so?
So one is like more kind of like that pop punk era that we're talking about before. It's very pop punk. There's something unhinged about it, I'd say, because it's a lot of, we had a friend do Steadicam work for it, so it's just a lot of motion. And then something that I'm very excited about that has never been done in a music video, and it's just very weird, is there's tape sculptures of people. So it's like, you can make... you can make like mannequins out of people by like saran wrapping and then taping up and then like cutting them out, and then you could just remake the person.
Okay, and you're not using like plaster or anything or any type of mold. You're just literally straight up tap. Like the plaster wrap to protect the skin, of course.
Yes.
And then the like duct tape?
Yeah.
Or okay, so
like plastic tape, yeah.
Yeah, and then you're just wrapping a whole ton of times so you get some level of stiffness.
Yeah.
How long does that take?
So it did take a while.
That's commitment.
Yeah. But it looks really cool because it's like, so like the idea of that was, so it's like talking about drink, like not wanting to drink at a party is kind of the vibe of the music video. So I wanted to elevate that, kind of going back to like the weird psychological element of that, where it's, what if there is like people that could be filled up and then the talent was the one that couldn't? So if we make them hollow. So it's interesting where they're just like in a party that is like hollow.
Oh, okay. So, I get it. So now that psychology, again, you're bringing that into the sense that they feel like an empty vessel that can't be filled. Right? Everyone else is normal.
Yeah.
But the talent themselves. So are you like, you're making these, I'm going to call them mannequins, tape mannequins, move like during, or are they really like still, or are you doing like almost like a stop motion thing where they're like performing?
That would have been too much commitment.
Okay. I was going to say, I was like, so just to visualize, or are you just getting them in like different movements?
Yeah. Kind of like? I'd say kind of like in weird sculpture form where it's like, we try getting them into positions where it feels like they have a lot of motion. So like we have people like mid drink, we had two tape mannequins making out and they're like,
yeah,
they're just like up in each other's face. We have two that are puking. Mm. So like one person's consoling the other. And then there's one we just like did saran wrap for the puke.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very unhinged look, but I'm very excited about it.
No, that's cool. Did you like paint these or anything like that, or you just dressed them up?
So they're completely naked.
Oh, okay, got you.
little naked guys. But what we did just to add a little bit more visual intrigue to them was we had colored lights kind of fill, like the way light interacts with them is like a little bit like, it reflects within itself and it's very eerie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because obviously the saran wrap still exists on the inside of the tape.
Yeah.
And it's this plastic type tape, like duct tape, which is naturally a bit reflective.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds super interesting. And I think you're right. I don't think that's ever been done in this video before. So yeah, that's exciting. And tell us a little bit about the other one that you're excited about.
So the other one, so like more of their music is like pop punk, but this one I would almost describe as very Florence and the Machine.
Mm.
So very exciting for me as as an Autumn de Wilde wannabe, is nice. We made like a fun little, it has like a narrative intro and it's kind of inspired by the story of the yellow wallpaper and like a visual from Nightmare on Elm Street. So it's, in and of itself, it's like technically a horror short film.
Okay.
So, and what we did is we built like a spandex wall similar to what they did in Nightmare on Elm Street. They had like a rubber wall, so it's a little bit more, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like you saw a person like dip through. And yeah, it was just like an interesting way to do that. Cause like, I really love the story of the yellow wallpaper, but I think it's kind of like so many people do yellow wallpaper, in terms of just like, it's public domain. It's like something we're all taught in high school. It's like a story we could all get behind. But I want to do something different where it's like, what if this was like a physical manifestation of the person Erica wants to be? So yeah, it's like a fun thing where it's, instead of it just being someone trapped in a psychosis, it's like a siren. Like the wall itself is a siren.
Got you. And for some of the viewers that may not know, can you just explain a little bit about the yellow wallpaper that you were missing? Yeah.
It's a feminist horror short story about like, basically, I think it was like, 1890s. Wife and husband rents out an old, like, Victorian-type summer home so that she could get better because she's too sad. She's writing too many sad things. Like, that's, you know, that's his reasoning for you must be locked up in a room so you can get better. Mm. You can get some fresh summer air. And because, like, she's not allowed to write, she's not allowed to do anything, see other people, she basically goes bad. And she believes that there's someone behind the yellow wallpaper. Because she has nothing else. Like, it's just pure psychosis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now you're combining that with where you're doing the look of like Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Nice. That sounds exciting too. That's a cool combo because then that's what you're using the spandex wall for. And then you're getting obviously all that like dark orange and teal look that Nightmare on Elm Street is known for. And so those are coming out this summer.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm very excited about both. They have like, I mean, like part of me is like a little bit more excited about the spandex wall one because that one has like a short film element. But then the other one, it's like, it's just like so maximalist.
Yeah.
Like I'm very excited about that one as well.
Amazing. So you describe yourself as both a director and a production designer. For our viewers, can you dive into a little bit what a production designer is? Because I feel like that's a term for people who are starting out or may not be in film, but not from film school or something that they probably haven't heard that before.
No, that's a really good question. Cause like a lot of people also confuse what an art director is and a production designer. And it's like, it is like a very specialized term. So it's the person who designs the sets and like, depending on what level of project you're doing, they might have like other people under them, but they're the main person that spearheads the look of a film in terms of just like physical, tangible things.
Okay. And that's different from an art director. How so?
So an art director is more the logistics of making that happen.
Okay. So of the actual art, you would say of design, of product, of set design, like they're actually like, okay, so the set designer, the way I kind of think of it is in construction. You got your architect, you make the blueprints, so you're the architect. You're like, this is how the set should look to communicate the idea or whatever the director wants. And then the art director is like the foreman or the head of the construction is like, okay, this is all the material. This is everything we need to make it happen. Okay.
No,
so they work in tandem.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So, and then you've had, obviously you do that a lot for your own films, having that experience. And, now would you say what's more of the passion in the design or in the actual directing? Like if you had to pick one.
If I had to. So like, obviously I love directing more. Mm. Like I'll say that out. But
what aspect about it?
Like directing?
Really, yeah, that directing, that really like, it's what gets you going. Because I know all of us, this is art. This is, gets us our passions fire. But what really is the part of it that's just like, yeah, this lights my fire every time.
So I think the reason I like directing the most is it's the totality of it. Because I'm very interdisciplinary in, I know the VFX side, the color side of things. I know the design side of things. Cinematography, because I thought it would make me look cool. I know some cinematography things. So it's just like, I could take these elements and then kind of the sum is greater than its parts.
Yes. So it's really like just having that total control And then now you can communicate to all the pieces, but you are at the forefront. So you kind of see how it gets from inside your head to on a screen, ultimately.
Oh, absolutely. And like just being able to, I think a good thing with me as a director is that when I say like, oh, we're going to do this kooky thing, like we're going to build a spandex wall and it's going to work. No one's like, okay, but like how? Most people are like, it's probably going to work. It's like, it's her.
That's a nice place to be. That's for sure. You feel like you were in the beginning though, you were at a point where you needed to kind of proof your ideas a little bit with people.
Oh, definitely. Like even with production design, it's like sometimes, yeah, like especially with production design, you kind of have to do like a test of things, or like you have to build a model, especially like if you're building something, you always have to like sell the director or sell client on something.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked a little bit about this before, but I would love you to talk about now, you know, having the success you had in music videos and directing. Now you have a bit of a portfolio building up. What is next? What are you looking forward to doing next? I know you have some projects that are already in the pipeline, but like, what is the ultimate direction, you know, that you want to take your career in?
So ultimate goal is to actually be a commercial director in the sense of, you know, like, probably everyone's seen these by now, but it's like there's some really beautiful ads coming out of advertising that are, you know, like award worthy, that they have like beautiful transitions, beautiful story. They're, the way like the path that advertising is going into is accelerating at a rate that is more than average filmmaking in terms of really connecting story with like brand and meaning. And it is so potent because the your longest story is like 2 minutes. So like it is literally like if filmmaking is a beer, advertising is a shot.
I got it. It's the strong concentration version, you know. I mean, it's true. I think the one thing that I'm seeing in commercials and the commercial space now is that the story is growing. Because it's the human element. So much of the technical stuff is even automated to this point, you know, and this and that. But like the human element is becoming more and more. And I think people, like brands are becoming like people, like their own entity, like a friend, you know. And it's definitely moving from like the practicalness of the brand and the practicalness of the products and moving into the people they like more, you know, the brands that they connect to. It's way more emotional than before. And I'm seeing that, like, more often than not, these commercials, I'm like, you don't see the product once.
Exactly. But, like, you don't need to.
You're just, like, you associate the name with a good feeling. And I agree with you. I'm so impressed by some of these ads now where in a span of 30 seconds or a minute, like, I already felt emotions. I felt connected to.
And some features will not do that for hours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're like, why? Who? What? Yeah, and it's like 40 minutes in this.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know if you remember the gum commercial where it's like long lost lovers.
Oh, yeah.
And he does a gallery. And the gallery is like the gum wrapper that he shared with her like 15 years ago. And it's like that spot, it's only 30 seconds long and it just like sweeps.
Yeah, I have so much respect and so much love for Ryan Reynolds' new advertising company. Yeah, all of them. So he has a company now called Maximum Effort, which I love the title too. That's great. But he's done like the Mint Mobile stuff. You know that 2020match.com commercial where the devil goes on dates from match.com?
No, but that sounds hilarious.
I saw that, and every time it will pop on, like even when it pops up on YouTube, it's like it catches me immediately. The story is funny. You connect to the characters like instantly. That was one of his first ventures in commercial. And I thought it was just so well done. And it's like you don't even realize what it's about till the end, the name pops up and you're like, okay, yeah, I get it. But and he's done a couple of that where there's like these really like almost like action comedy or just comic versions. And he does some really low budget stuff too, which is funny to me. Like the Mint.
Those are hilarious.
Did you see the one with his kid recording on the phone?
No, but I saw the one where it was just like he couldn't even get his wife in there.
Yeah. And I think he also like broke the mold in the sense that it's like, You don't need to go crazy on production value. Like that one with the kid that I saw was like, that could have been here, you know, in our studio, because it was like a green screen, but there was no green screening happening. You can see the truss and the outside of the wall, and it really was like a phone, like not even in focus. And it was effective, and it was just a simple title card at the end. But he connects with you like almost immediate. And, you know, part of it's his star power, granted. But also, honestly, you could probably fit most people in those situations and it would connect, because I've seen his other stuff where he's not involved personally. And it's just real good story writing. And then another good example when it comes to marketing is Apple. Like, I have Apple products. I'm not the biggest fan. I do prefer certain operating systems over that, but I also use them and I have a lot of respect for them. But their marketing, I will never deny that, because some of their commercials are like Marvel worthy.
Have you seen the spot called The Greatest?
Maybe you describe it a little.
Yeah, it's the newest Apple commercial where it demonstrates all of the how accessible it could be to certain abilities. Mm. And it's really cool. They did like an original track, and it's like a really fun way to show how people of different abilities can use Apple products to do the same things as an enabled person.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is an incredible spot. That one's like sweeping the advertising awards, but that one's like an Apple spot. Yeah. That is just like, that made me feel so many things about Apple, where it's just like, yeah, this is doing better than most filmmaking.
And you know what? That's really is a big part of their massive, megalithic success, you know, because their products, I would say, are comparable to some other products out there, and some not as good. But the one thing I notice with anyone who uses Apple is they're diehard fans.
Oh, absolutely.
They're like, more than anyone else I see, like, they are diehard fans, and you cannot tell them otherwise. But it's because they, for years, they've been ahead of the game of creating connection through their brand, and it's about the brand, you know? So it's like, and that's like, you can't deny that, you know? But it's like, yeah, so it's like you said, it's with that story building and everything. So what would you say is something that, what would be some like dream companies you would say that you would like to build stories for?
So one that I absolutely love is Liquid Death. If you ever need like a good laugh, just go to their YouTube channel and check out any of their spots. They're completely unhinged. Like their newest one is it's called like recycled plastic surgery. And it's because a lot of their brand messaging is we should be canning water instead of plastic bottled water, because plastic doesn't usually get recycled, but like aluminum does. So with their recycled plastic surgery center spot, it's like they're recycling plastic by putting it in people for plastic surgery. And it is just so unhinged and just so silly. And like, yeah, with their spots, sometimes they go all out, but then sometimes it's literally green screen and like one of the arms of someone is like actually a producer's arm. It's like, yeah, their spots are just so, so interesting and unhinged in like the best way. So yeah, I'd love to do a Liquid Death spot. Visually, I really love what Vans does. Vans does like some like docu-style spots, but they're all like, they're honestly like edited like music videos.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, a lot of the sports brands tend to be more like that, more cinematic, more like a music video or a documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, Under Armour has a lot like that, where it's more documentary style with their athletes. But they're I don't know if you've ever seen like the Mike Phelps one with Johnny Agar. Johnny Agar is he does triathlons, and he's done the Ironman several times. He's also a paraplegic, and so he's done this with like limited control of his entire body. And it's a father-son team, and it's a very inspirational story. And Under Armour did a spot with him and putting him like in the same conversation with The Rock and Michael Phelps and everything, because he did what he has a book out called Impossible Mile. So he did a mile on foot himself, obviously through some help and stuff like that. But yeah. He did a whole marathon, and then the last mile, he got on a special like walker that allows him to take steps, and he took a mile worth of steps, which for him, you know,
yeah,
is a super inspirational. So Under Armour did a commercial kind of reflecting that, and but I just remember it was very documentary, very cinematic. So yeah, definitely seeing that. So you definitely like, but it sounds like you really want to go like that comedy-esque edge to it / music video edge to it.
Yeah, I'd say definitely in terms of like what I would love to see for myself in terms of working in advertising, working in commercials, is definitely music forward. I think it's kind of crazy that most ads don't start with the music. They actually start with like literally anything else. It's like we should be starting music first. We should be figuring out like a complete picture.
And why do you say that?
I mean, because like the spots that do like the greatest is like a great example of this, where they did like they picked out the song first, and like the talent actually sings to the song, and it's such a powerful song because it's like basically it's like them going like, I'm the greatest, and it's like it's such an empowerment song for like them to sing and for them to be featured in it. And it's like that was like the full idea of the spot, and that's like very powerful to combine that versus like other spots where it's like you could tell the music was like a little bit more of an afterthought.
And in your own words, how would you describe the power of music in a story, in a spot, like that element of the whole video? Like, how would you describe the importance of music? Because some people are so visual that is, like you said, a secondary thing, because they're trying to, salespeople are trying to, marketers are trying to get the product and features out there or the brand message out there, and the visual guys just want to make sure the picture looks great. But like as a director who is an overseer of all this, you know, like what do you feel is the true use of music in any project?
So I think there's something about the way music can kind of get at your subconscious, or like you could insinuate something with music that someone just saying something can. There is just something a little bit, not necessarily more primal, but it just gets at your heartstrings more immediately. And then when you combine that with a perfect visual, perfect performance, it's the sub is greater than its parts.
So you really see it as the bed to the whole story. Like it really is an integral part, just like how the color can help inform the visual story.
No, absolutely. Having like through lines like that just elevates the entire project.
No, that's great. I love how it all really ties into that psychological aspect of what you're trying to get at. That it's really, what's the word I'm looking for? Not wholesome, but like a synergy. There's a synergy between all the parts. Like you said, you're really going for the sum of the parts, like really connect the person to the person in the video or the message in the video.
No, exactly. Like, especially with the Homecoming music video, one of my favorite things that someone told me at Blackbird Film Festival was, I think your music video lets me hear the music better. And it's like, yes, that's what I was going for. Thank you.
Those are honestly some of the best comments, honestly.
Right?
Where it's not like technical, but it's more of like the overall goal or emotion, you know?
Yeah, because like someone's project could look beautiful, sure. It could be a great story, sure. But if it like the complete thing affects someone, there's nothing better.
Mm-hmm. And I even think like commercially speaking, like those are the things, like that's what everyone should want, you know, because when people feel it, that retains it, you know, because we tend to memorize, like our brain will remember things that has emotions attached to it. Or unless you're just blindly like looking at thing and doom scrolling it, you know, if it doesn't like connect to something, then usually there's not like a retention rate, not as much at least, you know.
No, exactly.
So I can definitely see that, and that applies to every, I think, medium that we tried to work in, right?
Yeah.
So now, you know, before we wrap up here, I think What I would love to hear is anything that you would love to share to someone who may be trying to get started in directing or in just in the film business in general, based off of things that you've learned through your journey and things that you wish you could have told yourself in the beginning.
That's such a perfect question. I guess I'll start with one that's helping me currently. Is right now I'm part of the AICP mentorship program, and that's the Association of Independent Commercial Producers. So the AICP website has a bunch of great resources for aspiring directors. That is like a great resource that every aspiring director, especially in the commercial music video space, should always keep an eye out for. And then I'm trying to think for like aspiring. Definitely learn how to color. Learn how to color is.
I mean, that's a good one. Dude, the color, it's like one of those things. I mean, there's so many elements that make or break a video, but definitely color is a big one because you can, especially like at our level, we can tell when things haven't been really colored properly. And it's a great story. It's a great visual. even the sound could be great. But like if the color is unmatched, then... So I'm going to say that again. So if the color is unmatched, then there's a disconnection, you know, takes you right out of the visual and it takes you out of the connection. So I definitely agree with that. I thought that was a great statement too, just learning the different aspects of film, you know?
Yeah, I'd say, I feel so much better. Thank you. No, especially like, I know like the catch-all advice that a lot of people give aspiring directors is like, you got to learn every part of production. And it's like, for the most part, that's true. Like it does help you communicate with collaborators or know what's possible when you could do something yourself. Like if you work in VFX and then you want to direct something, you're able to integrate VFX in the creative more immediately because you know what's possible. You know how it works with it. With production design, I'm able to pitch music videos that have insane visuals for like the budgets I'm pitching for in terms of like a reflective water set or like a complete bedroom build with a spandex wall. It's like I'm able to pitch those things because I have the experience in production design, so I know how to integrate that with my directing creative. But yeah, I'd say you don't have to know everything. You don't have to be an expert in everything. I do think certain things are better to learn than others. Like, I think, yeah, like, kind of what we were saying in terms of, like, color. Color, I think, is, like, a little bit more immediate in terms of, like, you could see what you want in terms of cinematography, in terms of feeling, in terms of look, more immediate than trying to learn how to shoot.
No, 100%. Well, thank you so much for coming out here and having this conversation with us. As always, you can connect with us on Instagram, on all the sites, you know, Vision Maker Podcasts and also Vision Maker Productions and on all social medias. And Nicole, where can everybody find you?
You can definitely find me on Instagram. I am the Film Fatale. I'm trying to think of, you should definitely follow Erica. Their band is America Jane. They're everywhere you could stream music, also on Instagram, also on TikTok.
That's good to know. And so that's the Film Fatale. So it's the_film.
I know.
Fatale, right?
So many underscores. I wish I could just get the Film Fatale without, but you know.
I get it. Yeah. Happens to all of us. Well, that was great. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. We'll see everyone next time.